It seems like any discussion of skydiving quickly gets to the question of why people jump out of functioning airplanes. You can add another set of questions to the practice of smoke jumping, that's jumping out of an airplane to go fight a forest fire. Smoke jumpers are a special breed with special training and facilities, and there's a good example of the facilities at the airport in the Illinois Valley near Cave Junction. That's the home of the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum, which got a sprucing up not long ago. Gary Buck is the Smoke Jumper Base Museum president and our guest here in the studio on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Gary.
Hi. How you doing, Jeff?
Good. Thanks for coming in. Tell us a bit about you're a smoke jumper yourself. Is that right?
I was. I was a smoke jumper for 17 years. 12 in Oregon and 5 in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Is that an especially long time for somebody to be a smoke jumper?
That's pretty long. When I first started jumping, 3 years was a long time for smoke jumpers. When I ended my career, there were guys who were in a 25-year, actually longer than me.
It sounds like a fairly hazardous line of work, or certainly can be. So I mean, any idea about the history of how it all got started? Who were some of the first people to jump into fire areas?
There were some people back in Washington, D.C. that did not want this program to start. They thought it was too dangerous, too risky. There would be too many injuries. They also, when they started the program in the early 40s, they didn't have enough bodies to be smoke jumpers because most of the able-bodied possible participants were either in the war in Europe or in the Pacific. So they had to call on conscientious objectors. There were 4 original smoke jumper bases: McCall, Idaho; Winthrop, Washington; Missoula, Montana; and Cave Junction, Oregon. And all of them had conscientious objectors. They were Quakers and Mennonites for the first 3 years. Then in 1946, all these guys came back from airborne units from World War II, and they became the next batch of smoke jumpers.
But that's really interesting that during the war, essentially, the people who would not function as paratroopers because they didn't want to take part in the war would jump out of planes to go fight fires.
Yes, it was a small percentage of these conscientious objectors were in the civilian public service, and there was less than 1% of them that would volunteer to be smoke jumpers. They weren't paid a salary. They were only fed, and they had a place to sleep, and they were only paid if they were on a fire. So most of the time, they didn't make any money.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty rough existence at times.
Yeah.
So what does a smoke jumper do? I mean, the term sounds fairly dangerous in and of itself. You're not jumping right into a fire, but you're clearly jumping close enough to be able to have some effect on it.
Right. So the closer, the better. I mean, there's a safety issue, of course, but most of the fires we're jumping were lightning-caused fires, and they were very small. That's the whole beauty of this idea of getting on the fire when they're small, when you can suppress it really quick before it gets big and more dangerous.
So you can only travel with so much stuff. I mean, obviously, you don't want to take a 200-pound guy and strap another 80 pounds of gear on him because they'll make a pretty big hole when he hits the ground potentially. So what kind of things do you bring with you when you're a smoke jumper?
Well, when you're jumping, you have about 65 pounds of gear. That's just your jumpsuit, two parachutes, main and a reserve, and just a basic emergency equipment. But there's cargo that comes in that's parachuted in after the jumpers reach the ground safely. They radio the plane they're okay, signal the plane they're okay, and then they start dropping cargo. That's food, water, tools, emergency, first aid,
So it's more than what you can carry on your back. You do get some supplies.
Yes, right. Okay. Now you have to carry all this out, though, because so sometimes your pack out is 110 to 160 pounds. You have to carry everything out of the woods that you can't burn in the fire. If they send in paper or cardboard, you can throw it in the fire and burn it up, but everything else has to be carried out.
What kinds of – do you tend to work as singles or do you work as multiples on a crew? Or how did smoke jumpers usually deploy or do still? Because I understand they do still smoke jumpers.
They do. You always jump at least two smoke jumpers at a time. They have women smoke jumpers now. They didn't when I was jumping. There's still 425 smoke jumpers in the United States. There's 40 in Canada. Russia has 2,000 smoke jumpers. Their program has paralleled ours, and they even have a reciprocal program now between the Russians and the U.S. jumpers, where they trade ideas and techniques, and it's a goodwill, good PR thing. Everybody likes the program.
It seems like one of the things that people would like about it is the lack of expense. I mean, there's specialized training and stuff, but it's a whole lot cheaper to send a couple people close to a lightning strike than to try to get an air tanker.
It is the most efficient aerial firefighting force they had back in the 40s and the 50s and all these years, and still is today. It's extremely good economics.
Gary Buck is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the president of the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum in the Cave Junction area. And he's a smoke jumper himself, a 17-year veteran of smoke jumping, retired from that practice now. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the practice of smoke jumping or about the museum itself at the Illinois Valley Airport. Join us at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Get a look at our Facebook page and get a gander at Gary sitting here in the studio with me. When did you mention that the Basin Cave Junction was one of the first ones established in the country?
Yes.
Okay.
Was.
And established when?
In 1943. There were a couple of bases that were older than the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper base, but they've been torn down. So this makes the buildings and the actual base at the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper base, which is 4 miles south of Cave Junction, this makes it even more historically valuable, because we're talking about the oldest standing smoke jumper base in the world.
And when was it deactivated? When did it cease to be a smoke
jumper base? In 1981, and the reason they did it is because they said they want to save money, but they have not saved money since they closed the base. 1986, the Forest Service, who ran this smoke jumper base, gave the base to Josephine County. The Josephine County had it for many years, but it had a difficult time trying to keep up with maintenance of the buildings and having enough money and time to take care of everything. And in 2004, they decided to bulldoze the entire base. There's still 250 smoke jumpers alive that jumped at this base, like myself. And we went to the politicians and said, please don't bulldoze this. It's very, very valuable and will become more valuable as time goes on. And basically they said no, because we don't have the means to support you on this. And we said, we'll put up all the money, we'll do all the work, we'll make it a museum. And they said no. So for 6 years, we bothered and persevered with all the politicians until they got tired of us and they let us do it.
So you really had to keep up a long-standing campaign.
6 years.
But you managed at least to stop the bulldozers from taking the place.
We stopped the bulldozers. And now the commissioners in Josephine County, the airport manager, Larry Graves, has been, all of them have been very supportive in helping us to maintain and actually improve this museum as time goes on. And we appreciate all the visits. We have signs on the highway. We have a website, SiskiyouSmokeJumperMuseum.org. If you want to look on the website, it would, be great. And please come visit.
It's linked from our website as well at jeffexchange.org. Grab your headphones. We got a phone call for you.
Okay.
I want to go to Mike in Eagle Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base with Gary Buck. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
It's my understanding that the reason the smoke jumper program was initiated during World War II was to defend against Japanese incendiary devices, which were being released by balloon with the purpose of starting wildfires in the Northwest. And this was a highly classified program. The government did not wish the American public to become aware of it, as I understand, and I wonder if your guest could comment on that.
It's an excellent question. Thanks for that, Mike.
Hi, Mike. It's true. What you said about them trying to make it secretive and classified, that's all true. What it really depended more on was on September 9th, 1942, the Japanese pulled up in an I-25 submarine outside of Brookings, Oregon, and they had a plane attached to the deck of the submarine in an airtight, watertight compartment, and they opened that watertight and launched this plane, which is like a small Zero, off the top of the deck of the submarine. It flew up and dropped two incendiary bombs on Mount Emily, which is just 20 miles from the smoke jumper base. This had a huge influence on why they opened the Cave Junction base in the first place. So they opened the base 6 months after this incident. The actual balloon bombs started in late 1944 and they continued through 1945 for the first 5 months. They launched 9,300 balloons. They did not want the public to know. They were afraid that the public would be frightened of this, and they also didn't want the Japanese to think that these balloon bombers were successful. They would have been a lot more successful had they continued on through the summer, but they actually they got the sandbags from some of the balloons that had landed, crash balloons. They had 1,000 confirmed landings in the United States, and they took it to the National Geologic Unit in Washington, D.C., and they analyzed the minerals in the sand, and they found out that sand had to come from the east coast of Honshu Island, Japan, and we sent up some B-29 bombers off the Marianas Islands, and they bombed the hydrogen plants. These balloons were filled with hydrogen. They saw balloons being launched, and they bombed these plants and stopped this, you know, the balloon bombs.
Whole lot of interrelation then between World War II and the struggles in the Pacific,
yes.
and smoke jumping as well. Gary Buck, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the president of the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum. You can join us here at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Or, for that matter, you can check us out on Facebook and see a picture of Gary from just a few moments ago. Lillian Springfield wants a bit of a refresher about what it is that smoke jumpers actually do. We haven't really gotten to the nitty-gritty of when people jump out of planes to do this firefighting task. What are some of the things they do on the ground?
After you reach the ground, you signal the aircraft you're okay. They start dropping the cargo, which we talked about, food, water, tools. Then you take and you dig a line around the fire. This is what happens in the Pacific Northwest. In Alaska, they have a different method. They beat the flames out up there because they're in thick tundra. They don't try to dig through the tundra. Down here, you dig a line to mineral soil around the fire. And, you know, the whole beauty of this thing is sometimes these fires are as big as your house or smaller. We get on them fast with at least two jumpers. Two jumpers jump in. It's not enough. They'll call for more jumpers. Retardant planes come in, aerial retardant planes, and help the smoke jumpers by cooling the fire down and helping build, you know, so they can get in and build a line around the fire.
So you're going to be cutting some brush and things like that? Do you have cutting tools with you?
Yes, uh-huh. Also, they drop chainsaws in the cargo if you need it.
I kind of figured you'd have to be able to cut stuff out of the way so you could make a clearing there. Mm-hmm. Another call here from Chuck in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking smoke jumping and the Smoke Jumper Base Museum with Gary Buck.
Hi. We bought a place in Chiloquin back in 1983, and it was formerly owned by a fellow named Rufus Robinson. And the story was that he was one of the first smoke jumpers in the Payette in the 1940s. And the story was that he jumped out of the plane with another fellow. The fellow got hung in the tree, and Rufus put the small fire out and then cut his friend down. And I hope that that's something of record, or at least Rufus is.
All right, let's find out
anything about that.
All right, thanks for the call, Jack. Appreciate it.
Yes, Rufus Robinson is very famous. He jumped with Earl Cooley. They were the first two smoke jumpers in the United States. To this day, they're honored. I see them in the National Smoke Jumper Association magazine. I see both of those. They were very honorable. Earl Cooley just died. I think he was 97 or 98.
So what is it like on the ground for a smoke jumper? I mean, how fast you have to work, I guess, is one of the first things. When I think about you're jumping into a place where, you know, you want to be sure that this thing gets taken care of quickly so that your own danger is limited,
right,
in addition to the danger to the forest itself. So how fast you have to work on the ground?
Sometimes you have to work really fast. Sometimes it's, you know, it depends on when you jump the fire. A lot of times if the lightning storm comes through in the middle of the night or early in the morning, you're jumping in the morning, you may have to work a lot harder because it's going to heat up during the day. The wind's going to increase. The humidity drops. If you jump at 6 or 7 in the evening, that's a beautiful time to jump because, you know, it's going to be dark soon. The humidity rises, the wind slows down usually, the temperature drops, and you get a real good shot at getting the fire.
Let's take another call. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking smoke jumping with Gary Buck.
Thank you for your volunteer work and also for the 17 years of smoke jumping. The Mount Emily site that was started by the firebomb from the airplane. I've hiked to that. There's a trail to it out of Brookings. Also, in the after the war, the pilot of that plane gave his sword to, you know, one of these ancient samurai-type swords to the city of Brookings as an apology for that act. And the sword is displayed in the public library in Brookings for anyone who's interested. Thank you.
Thanks for that call, Ann. I appreciate it. And I remember, too, that the pilot came to Brookings as the Grand Marshal for parade there.
Mm-hmm.
And all is forgiven kind of moment. Mm-hmm. That was about 20, 25 years ago.
Yes, that's true, Ann. That everything you said was true.
So are there many fewer smoke jumpers than there used to be because we do prefer to do attack from planes and helicopters and that sort of thing?
Well, like I said, there's about 450 smoke jumpers in the U.S., and they seem to be maintaining that level. There's always talk about cutting or possibly even expanding, but they seem to be maintaining that basic smoke jumper level.
Let's come back to what happened with the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base, which is now the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum, out of action as a smoke jumper base since 1981. County, we talked about bulldozing it in 2004. You put up a fight, managed to get them to let you guys run this place as a museum as of 2010. Is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And how many buildings are there? Describe what you got out there, what the base consists of.
We have six major buildings there, and we've put six roofs on six buildings, and we've we have resided. We've had to put new windows in because when we got there, some of the glass had actually fallen out and was laying on the lawn, and the siding had rotted, and the roofs were leaking, and the windows were – sills were rotted. And so every year we have a work week, and sometimes we get 100 smoke jumpers and local volunteers that come and help. And that's when we do most of the work to repair the base. These buildings are getting very old, and it's a challenge, but we have we've done a lot of good things, and we are continuing to do that. We do it through donations and sales at the museum, and sometimes grants.
Gary Buck, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a former smoke jumper himself and the president of the Smoke Jumper Base Museum, the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum at the Illinois Valley Airport in Cave Junction. Join us with questions or comments at 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, or check us out on Facebook. Is the work week usually, or the work day usually in the summer sometime?
Yes, it's usually in the first 2 weeks of June. And we've had real good participation with this, and even sometimes the commissioners come out, the airport manager comes out, Larry, and we just get I think most of the museum right now is run on word of mouth. People come to it, they like the museum, they tell us they like it at least, and they tell other people, and they come, and it's been really. We're getting more participants every year, and we're doing better. It's improving all the time.
And is it open to the public for a certain period?
It's supposed to be open from March 15th to November 15th, but we've actually kept it all year, open all year for the last year and a half. So people come in there. We try to give them a tour, even if it's in the winter.
What is there to see there?
We have three buildings that are the main museum buildings right now. We have over 4,000 original photos. We don't have all 4,000 mounted and in the museum because we don't have enough walls to do it. But we have a lot of photos to pick from. We have over 2,000 restoration photos of just fixing the buildings. And we have hundreds of artifacts. We're just collecting artifacts and photos all the time of this very, very historic time. Some of the 40s photos are just, irreplaceable, the 50s and 40s especially.
How many people were based at the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base at any given time?
We usually had 28 jumpers. That was our, when they started with the conscientious objectors in the early 40s, they only had 12 jumpers. It was a very experimental program. They expected to shut it down after 2 or 3 years. But it kept growing instead, and there weren't near as many injuries as they figured.
But, it is a dangerous profession, obviously. I imagine that a few people have been lost over the years.
Yes, that's true. But, you know, we kind of looked at it like we had great training. We were either training or physical training, or we were building materials in the loft. Most of the materials we used were actually constructed in our parachute loft by the jumpers. The jumpers, you know, when they show up there, they don't know how to sew. But when they leave, they really, really know how to sew. So we made most of the gear, and we were very, you know, we took a lot of pride in our work. And we weren't paid a lot of money when I started there. I was making $2.20 an hour.
And what year was that?
1966.
All right. So I made $2.20 an hour about 10 years later at my first job at Pizza Hut. But then, so you were at least slightly above minimum wage, but not by much.
I feel a little better now.
Did you have some hairy moments as a smoke jumper yourself, Gary?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be risky jumps. Some of them look pretty scary from the plane when you look down. Some of them look kind of easy. And if you happen to look out the window, you're checking things out. Some of them look like they're just going to be real, really fun and easy, and they are. And some of them look, you know, hazardous and risky, and sometimes the fire is the biggest risk, not the jump.
Have there been times you look out the window and say, okay, this is not what we thought it was. This is not a good place to jump. Let's not do this.
Yeah, I've been counting the guys ahead of me on the plane. Like, if they come back and I think, well, I'm number five to jump out, so I hope they only have four on this jump because it looks really dangerous, you know. And then they come back and say, first six, after I, you know, say that.
So you've been doing some sprucing up at the museum, I understand. Did you get a grant or something to help you with your work?
We've had three or four grants, and, you know, we take donations at the museum. People go through the tour, and they're very helpful to us and generous and encouraging, and that's great for us.
It's called the Siskiyou Smoke Jumper Base Museum. Its website is linked through our website at jeffexchange.org or from our Facebook page. Gary Buck is the president of that and a smoke jumper veteran himself. Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care.